Way News. I'm Victor Beatty. President Donald Trump has expressed concern over the fate of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who disappeared October 2nd after entering the Saudi consulate in Istanbul.
It's a very sad situation. It's a very bad situation, and we want to get to the bottom of it.
Mr. Trump told reporters Wednesday he's spoken with Saudi authorities at the highest level.
This is a bad situation. We cannot let this happen. To reporters, to anybody, we can't let this happen. And we're going to get to the bottom of it.
The Trump administration is seeking more information from Riyadh and a transparent investigation. The president also revealed that he and First Lady Melania Trump would like to invite Khashoggi's fiancée to the White House. Atis Kengiz waited for him to leave the consulate in Istanbul, but he never did. There are growing concerns Khashoggi, a highly placed and frequent critic of Saudi policy, was either abducted or murdered. Senator Lindsey Graham said if Khashoggi was killed, that would cross every line of normality in the international community.
If it did happen, there would be hell to pay. This hangs over the relationship like a very heavy cloud.
Turkey has demanded access to search the consulate, and a pro-government newspaper published a report identifying a 15-member Saudi intelligence team believed to be involved in the journalist's fate. Cameroon continues to await results of Sunday's presidential election. That incumbent Paul Biya is widely expected to win. Issambé Émile is president of the Constitutional Council.
This is the first presidential election that the Constitutional Council is managing, and things are going well. And we want to expect that at the end of the day, all the Cameroonians will be happy with the way things went.
Official results are to be announced by October 22nd. Mr. Biya, in power since 1982, is seeking a seventh seven-year term. This is VOA News. Turkey Wednesday said the demilitarized zone created with Russia in Syria's rebel-held Idlib province has been formed and heavy weapons have been withdrawn. Russia's foreign ministry spokesperson Maria Zakharova said more than 1,000 militants have left the zone. About 100 military vehicles have also pulled out. Last month's agreement was aimed at averting a government assault that could result in an exodus of refugees and mass casualties. Asian stocks fell sharply after a major sell-off in the U.S. Wednesday, with the benchmark Dow Jones falling more than 180.30 points to close at 25,598, a more than 3% loss. It was the largest correction since early February. The plunge came amid rising bonds and alarm over the central bank's incremental increase in the key interest rate. Ross Berger is CEO of Gerber Kawasaki.
It's kind of par for October. It feels like October. But with rates, you know, spiking to 3.25, which is actually where we think rates should be, the markets have to digest this move on interest rates.
Investors are also concerned about rising trade tensions with China. President Trump Wednesday criticized the plunge at the central bank, saying the rate hikes are a mistake. A 7.0 magnitude earthquake struck remote New Britain Island in Papua New Guinea Thursday, the quake hitting about 200 kilometers southwest of Rabaul and briefly triggered a tsunami warning. Meanwhile, a shallow tremor measuring 6.0 in magnitude jolted Indonesia's Java and Bali Islands Thursday, with initial reports of at least 3 fatalities. Hurricane Michael has weakened to a Category 1 storm after crashing ashore along the Gulf Coast of Florida Wednesday as an intense Category 4 with winds as high as 250 kilometers per hour. One man was killed after a tree fell in his home. Governor Rick Scott said Michael was the worst storm the Florida Panhandle has ever seen.
We heard of significant impacts at Tyndall Air Force Base and many communities along the coast. We're turning 100% of our focus on search and rescue and recovery.
Michael caused severe flooding, structural damage, uprooted trees, and power outages. The center of the storm has now moved over southwestern Georgia. The Moroccan Navy opened fire on a boat that it said made a hostile maneuver and found to be transporting migrants. At least one passenger was wounded. The nearly 60 migrants were handed over to Moroccan security forces. U.S. Secretary of State Pompeo Wednesday said the release of an American detained Protestant minister by Turkey at his next hearing would be an important step and the right thing to do. Andrew Brunson has been charged with being linked to supporters of exiled Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen, the cleric Ankara blames for the failed 2016 coup. Brunson has denied the allegation. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Boate in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The U.S. has offered to assist Liberia find the truth about the country's alleged missing $16 billion.
We want to appreciate the government of the United States of America through USAID and the U.S. Embassy in Monrovia for instituting this measure. At least the process will have credibility, independence, and objectivity. This is what we wanted.
Martin Colley is one of the leaders of the group Concerned Citizens United to Bring Our Money Back. The Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions has called for a nationwide strike today, Thursday, despite a police ban on public gatherings. And a new report says the human toll of South Sudan's war is as bad as Iraq and Syria.
I think this places South Sudan more broadly on par with the likes of Syria and Iraq, as opposed to other sub-Saharan African conflicts that we've seen in the past.
Francisco Schetti is with the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. The Khartoum government is facing a crisis after a sharp weekend devaluation of its currency. And the United Nations says economic losses from natural disasters are soaring. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The U.S. government, through the United States Agency for International Development, has offered to assist Liberia find the truth about the alleged missing $16 billion. In a statement issued Wednesday, the U.S. Embassy in Monrovia said it has reached out to independent, internationally recognized firms with specialization in forensic investigations to conduct a scope in mission that could ascertain the basic facts about the alleged missing currency. The George Weah government announced last month that $16 billion Liberian dollars had been brought into the country without the government's knowledge. But earlier this month, both President Weah and the Central Bank of Liberia reversed themselves, say the money was not missing. Martin Colley is one of the leaders of the group Concerned Citizens United to Bring Our Money Back. The group had called for an independent international investigation.
Well, we protested on the 24th of September. We asked the international community, specifically the U.S. Embassy in Monrovia, to institute an international independent forensic investigative panel to probe this matter. Because up to now, we don't trust the government to take charge of this situation. We want to appreciate the government of the United States of America through USAID and the U.S. Embassy in Monrovia for instituting this measure. At least the process will have credibility, independence, and objectivity. This is what we wanted.
So what does that do now to your protest?
Temporarily, we are going to exercise restraint. We are going to exercise patience, because when you read the circular from the U.S. Embassy, the U.S. Embassy called on all of us to exercise patience. So we are going to listen to the U.S. government through the embassy near Monrovia to exercise restraint. As of tomorrow, Mr. Button, we are going to call on all of our people, all Liberians, across the 15 political subdivisions to exercise restraint. International investigators probe into this very delicate matter that has got to do with economic and security implications in Liberia.
The Central Bank of Liberia has come out to say that the so-called $16 billion Liberian dollars was not missing. President George Weah himself has come out to say the money is not missing. You seem to put more confidence in the U.S. Embassy than your own government.
Mr. Boke, let me say this. As chairman of the Concerned Citizens United to Bring Back Our Money, we want to reiterate that the government cannot be trusted. The government is not reliable to investigate this matter, because the government stands at the accused angle. You cannot be the accused at the same time the plaintiff, at the same time the jury. This is why thousands of Liberians had to petition the international community on September 24th to call for an independent international investigative panel to put into this matter. The government has given a lot of contradictory accounts. The Ministry of Finance has told us that the money in question is in circulation. The Central Bank of Liberia has told us that the money in question is in the vault. So who do we believe, Mr. Bote? Who do we believe? So these are contradictory accounts. On this basis, we cannot trust the government to investigate this matter. That is why we have to re-emphasize our position on demonstrating to the international community that there was an urgent need for investigation to be led by an international independent investigative forensic panel. And we want to appreciate the international community through the U.S. government for instituting this credible measure. We do trust the international community, but we don't trust the government. The government is not reliable. Even the panel that was set up by the president cannot be trusted, Mr. Bonte. A lot of the investigators on that panel are pro-CDC. They are seditions. They are seditions. How can we trust such a panel when they have blood relationships with even prime suspects on this particular process?
Martin Colley is one of the leaders of the group Concerned Citizens United to Bring Our Money Back. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, ZCTU, has called for a nationwide strike today, Thursday, despite a police ban on public gatherings. The purpose of the strike is to express workers' anger over a proposed hike in electronic money transfer tax and the crippling increases of basic commodity prices. ZTU Secretary General Japhet Moyo says they expect thousands of people to participate in today's protest, as most workers are now struggling to make ends meet, almost 2 months after President Emmerson Mnangagwa won a disputed presidential election.
We are expecting our members to cabin numbers. We are expecting our fraternal friends, faith-based organizations, NGOs, and all the colleagues we work with in the trade and in the social movements generally to come in numbers and support this action. This action is not for us only, it's for the generality of the Zimbabweans. Even those who are not formally employed, those in the informal economy. So we expect the numbers to come from various sectors of our society.
So we're informed that the police have not granted you permission to actually go into the streets and protest. So in a way, are you not fearing that you are going to be maybe attacked by the police or the army?
We don't need, in terms of our Zimbabwean law, we don't need the police permission. And we did not even seek for the permission. We merely advised or informed them that this is the action. We are merely exercising our rights in terms of the legislation. And therefore, we don't believe it is within the police powers to sanction the action. So the members are not even afraid to exercise their right. And we hope that the police who respect those rights, the police who allow the Zimbabweans to exercise their rights in terms of the law. We have been doing these activities over the years peacefully, without any incidents of violence, and we don't expect the police to be overzealous and beat up or harm anyone who's going to come and support us.
Japhet Moyo is the Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions. He spoke with Gabe Dube of View Zimbabwe's service. A ZANU-PF parliamentarian, Dingumuzi Puti, says the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions should engage the government rather than stage a nationwide strike today. He says the organization should have listened to the police concerns that huge public gatherings are likely to spread the cholera epidemic, which has already claimed 50 lives in Zimbabwe.
It's unfortunate that the ZCTU has decided that they incite people into demonstrating against a wrong program. Initially, they've told people that they should come and demonstrate against the 2% tax that was announced by the Reserve Bank Governor and the Minister of Finance. Yet, in actual fact, they want to link the shortage of some basic commodities themselves and the rise in terms of prices to all this. What there is, they have lied to people that it is the shortage. It is the 2% taxation that has resulted in this basic commodity shortage. And that is incitement, and that is wrong. As a result, people are going to be brought into the streets to demonstrate against something that is not what really is obtaining. And I think it's not procedural that when they are forewarned and told that they shouldn't go ahead with the demonstrations, they say they want to do that. opposing the arms of security at this time and stage, I believe, is very, very wrong.
But we see that, there is a critical shortage of fuel. Some basic commodities are also not on the shelves. And, the bond note has been degraded a lot. So at the end of the day, the CCTU says they have a right to actually demonstrate or make some public protests. Why do you think they shouldn't do that?
Let me correct you there, first of all, on your statement or selection of the word critical. There is no critical shortage of anything. They are meeting in the morning with captains of industry and people from various government ministries that are of economic cluster. We have discovered from the captains of industry, the manufacturers, that the abundance and adequate supply of anything in their original prices. And cooking oil, for instance, the Zim Gold directors were there. They told us that they had not effected any change in terms of prices, which means that whatever has happened in the market is by unscrupulous business people that are doing this as a result of incitement. Hence the suspicion that there is an invisible hand deliberately doing these things so that they achieve a particular meaning.
Dingumuzi Futi is a ZANU-PF parliamentarian. He spoke from Bulawayo with Gibbs Dube of US Zimbabwe Service. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 11th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. Close to 400,000 people have been killed in the civil war in South Sudan, half through violence, making the conflict among the worst that the world has seen in recent years, according to a new analysis by researchers at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. The researchers hope that the new analysis, which far surpasses earlier death toll estimates, will reveal the terrible human cost of the war and give a new impetus to peace talks and humanitarian funding. Henry Richwell reports.
The South Sudan civil war erupted in 2013 as rebels took up arms against the government. A peace agreement signed 2 years later broke down and the conflict spread. Fighting has continued despite another ceasefire deal signed last month. It has taken a devastating human toll. Researchers say the war has led to nearly 400,000 deaths, with around half of those attributable directly to violence, mostly adult males.
I think this places South Sudan more broadly on par with the likes of Syria and Iraq, as opposed to other sub-Saharan African conflicts that we've seen in the past.
The analysis led by Professor Keki was funded by the United States Institute of Peace. Researchers used census projections to estimate population figures alongside mortality data from household surveys. They also captured data on various predictors of mortality, such as conflict intensity, displacement, and food security. A statistical model was then used to estimate the death toll attributable to the war, covering not only violent deaths, but also those caused by a lack of healthcare, food shortages or disease, the indirect consequences of the conflict.
They have actually been shown in many different armed conflicts to be sometimes the majority of deaths attributable to the crisis.
The researchers say their findings underscore the urgency of resolving the conflict. They also hope the analysis can inform the humanitarian response in South Sudan, one of the largest worldwide. Its total funding requirement in 2018 is $1.7 billion, still only half funded, according to the United Nations.
I'm hoping that by putting fairly concrete, objective, hopefully scientifically credible numbers around some crude metric of the level of suffering and impact that these crises have on people, we're actually going to be able to influence that broad global commitment to humanitarian financing.
Keki now hopes to apply the statistical technique to other African conflicts, starting with Nigeria and the war against Boko Haram Islamist militants. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Many Sudanese are complaining after the government's sharp devaluation of the pound on Sunday, cutting its official value almost in half as an already serious economic crisis plagues the country. The end of long-standing U.S. economic sanctions in 2017 has now produced a hoped-for economic revival, and Sudan remains on the U.S. list of state sponsors of terrorism. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Housewives shop at a vegetable market in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, following the official government devaluation of the Sudanese pound Sunday from 28 to 47.5 to the dollar. Prices of staples are going up, and inflation has hit nearly 70% since the start of the year. One consumer in Khartoum tells Al Hora TV that rising prices are scaring everyone. He says prices are very, very high for everything, and it is hard to afford food, drink, and medical care. A middle-aged worker told Al Hora money is tight, and his salary does not cover half of his monthly expenses. Sudan's recently appointed Prime Minister Muataz Musa told Parliament Monday the government will allow the Sudanese pound to float freely. He says it is not entirely clear what allowing the Sudanese pound to trade freely against the U.S. dollar will do to the value of the pound. Sudanese economist Issam Ismail told Al Hora TV it will encourage badly needed outside investment by making the exchange rate clear to everyone. He says the Sudanese Central Bank and commercial banks will publicize rates in hard currency for investors and exporters to go by, so they will receive their money at a known value. The IMF has long urged the Sudanese government to have a unified exchange rate for its currency, but many observers think the economy is troubled by shortage of foreign currency. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The Burundian government has accused former colonial power Belgium of destabilizing the country and playing a role in the civil war that rocked the country for almost 50 years. The allegations came after Burundi's Truth and Reconciliation Commission presented its report to Parliament on Wednesday and revealing several mass graves countrywide. Moses Ariyavimana reports from Bujumbura.
Burundi has accused its former colonial power, Belgium, of playing a critical role in the civil war that rocked Burundi for decades. While addressing the parliament yesterday, Burundi Home Affairs Minister Pascal Barandagiye called on Burundi's Truth and Reconciliation Commission to investigate the role colonial masters played in the ethnic violence that left more than 100,000 people dead. He says the Burundian government knows that the colonial masters played a role even in the assassination of different leaders, and that it was time to bring to light the crimes that they allegedly committed and file lawsuit. As part of the healing and the reconciliation process among Burundians after the brutal ethnic violence, the 2000 Arusha Agreement that brought an end to the civil war in the country recommended the formation of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. The commission was formed in 2014 to look into what happened during the ethnic violence and bring about reconciliation among Burundians. According to the commission, more than 4,000 mass graves were revealed. Martin Nivyabandi is the Burundi Human Rights Minister.
Through different reports and through different researches, we realized that the colonial period was very troubled, and our culture had been seriously affected. And the cause of different crises we passed through as a nation. The colonial masters destabilizes our culture, our unity.
Burundi gained its independence from Belgium in 1962, 1 year after the assassination of Prince Louis Rwagasore, who is considered as the hero for Burundian independence. Burundi Human Rights Minister Martin Nivyabandi said in order to fully heal from the ethnic violence, no one should be excluded from the investigations.
The Belgium king took a decree which was revoking one component, the Hutu society component, and they gave privilege for some a category of people. In that way, they divided the society of Burundi. We have to know exactly all the history and reconcile ourselves without the involvement of foreigners.
The Burundian society is composed of Hutu, Tutsi and the Twa ethnic groups, with more than 70% from the Hutu ethnic group. The country was ruled dominantly by the Tutsi minority since independence in 1962. It was not until in 2005, when the incumbent president Pierre Nkurunziza took the office after the signing of the Arusha Agreement. However, critics say that the current government, which is now dominated by the Hutu majority, seems to have turned away from addressing the 1993 mass killings allegedly committed by the Hutu against the Tutsi. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
A new report finds a dramatic increase in the amount of economic loss incurred from natural disasters during the past 20 years, with climate-related disasters driving expensive property and infrastructure damage to new heights. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva at the launch of the study, jointly produced by the UN Office for Disaster Risk Reduction and the Center for Research on the Epidemiology of Disasters at the Catholic University of Leuven in Belgium.
The report finds most people are killed by earthquakes and tsunamis, but it says storms, floods, and other climate-related disasters are causing economic losses to soar. Between 1998 and 2017, disaster-hit countries have reported $2.9 trillion in direct economic losses, 77% resulting from climate change. Data show the United States has suffered the greatest economic losses, nearly $1 trillion, followed by China, Japan, India, and Puerto Rico. A senior official with the UN Office for Disaster Risk Reduction, Ricardo Mena, says rich countries bear the brunt of economic losses, while low- and middle-income countries are disproportionately affected by disasters.
The report shows that because of much higher vulnerability, people in low- and middle-income countries have 7 times greater probabilities of being killed by a disaster than people in developed nations.
The report notes those who suffer most from climate change are people in poor countries who contribute least to greenhouse gas emissions. It says this has drastic consequences for their future development. The report warns climate change is increasing the frequency and severity of extreme weather events. It says heat waves will be the biggest problem in the future and will be much harder to manage than storms and floods in rich and poor countries alike. The report urges countries to invest in disaster risk reduction. It calls that the most cost-effective way to reduce the growing risks from climate change. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The U.S. government, through the United States Agency for International Development, has offered to assist Liberia find the truth about the alleged missing $16 billion. In a statement issued Wednesday, the U.S. Embassy in Monrovia said it has reached out to independent, internationally recognized firms with specialization in forensic investigation to conduct a scoping mission that could ascertain the basic facts of the alleged missing currency. And that's it for this Thursday, October 11 edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Barton in Washington. Have a good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa your weekend destination.